Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Slapcast. This is another episode of our coverage of the 2022-23 season. I'm your host, Gage, as usual, and I'm delighted to be back with you all this evening. Plenty of action has taken place around the Premier League as Arsenal have regained the ground that they lost midweek. Chelsea have lost to a team that are bottom of the league and without a manager, and United are showing week after week that they may actually be the real deal. Those are all some of the topics that we are going to discuss this week. First, though, we need to say hello to the boys. I'm joined tonight by Ethan. Hello, Ethan.
Hello, Gage.
And I'm also joined by Reese, who I understand just spent the week house-sitting and chilling to himself. So how was that, Reese?
It was good. It was mostly pet-sitting, but it was also house-sitting because my parents have a doggy door. So I was watching my brother and his wife's dogs because they got a puppy recently. It was fine. I just hung out with the dogs. I watched a bunch of Game of Thrones because I've been watching that. Fun time.
Been enjoying it so far?
Yeah, I just finished season 2 and I watched episode 1 of season 3. And I'm a sucker for fantasy. So I'm loving it.
For sure. Of course, now is usually the time when I would be introducing Josh, but he is back home spending the weekend with his family and his fiance. So he has elected to sit out for a week, which means we are, of course, sending all of our hatred and ill will toward him. But his absence does, in fact, mean that we have a particular void to fill, which comes in the shape of question of the day. And I understand that Ethan has procured something for us.
Yeah, I usually step in when Josh is not here. So there's no real relation to this question. I was just thinking about it the other day. But obviously, this is, y'all might have gotten a hold of some before you turned 21. But recall when you first turned 21. Yeah, right. What was your first alcohol purchase?
I think it was probably Mike's Hard because I was a babe and that's all I knew that I liked.
You're still a babe.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it was a wee lad. I think it was a Mike's Hard pack. So it had like the normal original lemonade, strawberry, which I think is the best, and the grape.
What about Gage's Hard? Have you thought about that?
Well, we can't say until we have proof.
Yeah. Sorry, Zoom. Did you see that? Ethan Zoom just dummied me with a notification.
No.
I just got so scared. I thought it was no longer recording, but it wasn't. It was a jump scare. It was literally a jump scare.
I thought you were actually going to have proof for a second.
No, Zoom's notification was stop. It's time to stop. But I think my first purchase was a 6-pack of Dose and a handle of Pink Whitney because I'm a dick rider for the Spittin' Chicklets. So I've got to support the boys. Yeah. Shout out to Bella for eating my Spittin' Chicklets hat when we
She's
were
right
in...
over here.
Bella. She's a gremlin.
She's licking herself right now, so she's not listening.
What about you, Ethan?
So this is actually a funny story, and it's something that we talk about a lot here at our apartment. But so when I turned we celebrated my birthday with my family like a few days before my 21st, so I didn't really get to order anything at a restaurant or anything like that. But I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna buy it because it's cheap. I bought some $5 red wine, and it was toilet water. And so now
the Josh wine was the Josh. First?
Yeah, it was my first. And I got it at Target. So that's the most embarrassing first alcohol buy. Because I bought like this 6-pack of beer. Oh, I bought some vodka. And I'm like, no, I bought $5 Josh wine from Target. So thankfully I haven't done anything of the sorts since then. But yeah, it's pretty embarrassing. But yeah. It's funny. I would imagine Josh would say he bought like some like exotic beer or Truly. Yeah, I know he was really big into Yingling, or he still is, but like that was like his first thing. So I don't know, I should have asked him.
He drinks some of the like we'll be sitting down to do something and he'll be like, I'm drinking
Alaskan
thing of tequila, or I'm drinking a beer from
Ethiopia.
Got 3D printed this can in Antarctica and I'm eating it.
Why is he from Alabama?
I don't know, but I don't know why my default Josh voice
I'm
is from Alabama.
I'm drinking some Alabama, Alaskan tequila.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, God.
Sorry, Josh. Actually, I'm not that sorry. But let's get back on track here a little bit and move on to some Premier League action. As we mentioned last week, the title decider epic game of all contention happened in midweek between Arsenal and Man City. And then Arsenal actually played the first game of this weekend against Aston Villa. So we're just going to kind of do an Arsenal segment here at the beginning, I guess starting with the game midweek, because that was obviously the big headliner.
Yeah. So I'll just pretend as if I don't know what has happened this weekend because my mood has drastically changed since Wednesday. But day of, my thoughts were a mixture of a couple of things. First of all, I'll talk about the good. So, spoiler alert, we lost the game against City 3-1. I actually thought we were the better team for most of the game. It was just more of the same where we couldn't actually finish our chances. And City's just absolutely clinical. I thought, Thomas Partey, surprise exclusion. He had a knock leading up to the game. So Jorginho had to come in. I actually thought he was all right. He didn't really stand out, but I'm starting to gauge. It's probably a good thing, to be honest. It's what you want in that position. We just really couldn't get anything going. I thought tactically we looked sound. It was more of the same of what we've been doing. We just couldn't really finish. And I think we were, I think at this point on Wednesday, leading up to this weekend too, it was mainly a mental thing, to be honest, because we've just had a couple games now, Man City was our third game in a row that we had dropped points, which was more points than we dropped the entirety of the first half of the season, these past three games. So it's just totally mental, really. And it could have been really bad if we didn't respond against Aston Villa. I mean, the game ends. I'm obviously upset, but I tweeted afterwards. I was actually able to get over it pretty quickly because obviously, I mean, it'd be stupid to say at this point when we were first for the entirety of the first half of the season, it'd be stupid to say, well, top four is the goal. Because it's like, no, at this point, the goal has shifted. We want to win the league. But the main takeaway that I had, because the game ends, I'm bummed. And I'm like, man, I haven't actually felt this sad after a loss in a long time. And it's totally because I just love watching us play right now. So it was really easy to get over. Like, I got over it within the hour. Especially because, I mean, at this point, I mean, a lot of Arsenal fans were dooming. My older brother was texting me and being like, it's over, it's over. It's so done. We can't win the league, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, we're still tied. Like, we're behind on goal difference and we've played one game less. Like, let's calm down a little bit. I mean, that's pretty much all I had. I mean, the circumstances too of some of City's goals, not that they weren't deserved. It was just like the first one coming from that Tomiyasu mistake. But again, I was talking with Gage about it. Like, De Bruyne is the only player or one of the only players in the league that can actually finish that chance. Because although it seems like it should be easy, you know, the goalie's coming out, it's a one-on-one. It's at such a weird angle and he had to take it so quickly. He had to get the ball to dip so quick. So it's like totally, if it wasn't Man City, it probably doesn't go in. I think it was their second goal that Ramsdale would have saved. But again, Tomiyasu, and this one's not his fault. He goes in for the block. It just barely nicks his foot and takes a slight deflection. And it's like literally inches away from, I think it bounced over Ramsdale's gloves because of the deflection. So again, just kind of unlucky there. The third goal at that point is just, we're in our own heads. It's Man City. They're going to win the league. That kind of thing, that kind of thinking. And then we get to the weekend. Okay. The game starts Saturday. It's another 6:30 game. at 6:35 in the morning, I watch Aston Villa score against us, and I'm thinking I'm going to kill myself. This can't be happening again. This is Everton all over again. But, you know, we stay with it. The real challenge in this game was overcoming that mental block, as I said earlier, with finishing our chances. Because, again, we dominate the game. So we go down. Saka has a great chance. It was a really weird mistake from Tyrone Mings. He kind of heads it when he didn't need to. It goes straight to Saka, but he volleys it into the roof of the net. It was a really nice goal. 1-1. We continue play. They get a second. Oh, Coutinho. It was a really good bit of play from Aston Villa, I'll say that. They executed their game plan really well. It's just kind of, you know, absorb pressure, try and counterattack. And when you've got Ollie Watkins, who's just playing really, really well at that holding striker position, it's totally doable. And they took their chance really well. Coutinho finishes his 2-1. Again, I'm like, it's over. I woke up and watched us lose 2-1 against Aston Villa. City's going to win against Forest. Also, context, throughout the City game and throughout this game, Zinchenko has taken a bunch of shots. None of them were close. And he's never scored in the Premier League. So the balls keep coming to Zinchenko, and I'm like, please don't shoot. Please, I'm begging. But then we have this really good corner routine. It falls to Zinchenko. I was literally thinking that. I was like, don't shoot. Please pass the ball. And then he just scores from outside of the box. It's a really good finish. First goal in the Premier League. And it's such a good time, right, for you to get your first goal in the Premier League.
Is that really his first goal ever in the Premier League?
Yes.
Ever. Like even for City?
Yeah.
What the heck?
Yeah, it's a little crazy to think about. But, I mean, in these moments where, as a team, you have such this mental hurdle to overcome, you know, it's like we haven't been able to finish our chances. We've lost more points in the past three games than we have the entire season before that. We're behind Man City now after leading the league for half the season. We really need some of the other players to step up big, you know, and have their moments. And Zinchenko does that. Takes his goal. It's a really good goal. At this point, it's 2-2. It's looking like it's going to end 2-2. And I'm kind of coping at this point. I'm like, you know, we still have a game in hand. At least we didn't drop points, blah, blah, blah. And then another just great bit of play. I saw, like, it was such a telegraphed pass. Everybody and their mom saw Jorginho just kind of run in from the bottom of the screen. I'm thinking, please pass to Jorginho. It's going to go in. Like, I could just feel it in my bones. They pass to Jorginho. It's absolutely just – it's a cannon. It is a cannon. Goes off the crossbar. Does not go in off the crossbar, though. It drops down, and Emi Martinez scores his first goal for Arsenal after 10 years. Great time to score. No, I mean, it's really unlucky for Emi Martinez. It goes bar down, hits him in the back of the head, goes in. Nothing you can really do about that, but it had to be him, right? It had to be against Emi Martinez. 3-2. This is in the 94th minute that this happened, 93rd minute that this happens. I'm freaking out. I'm puppy sitting, as I mentioned, so I'm trying to not make any noise. So I start fist bumping really hard. But I'm completely silent because I don't want to wake the puppy up. I'm like, just making no noise. And then, you know, it ends up 4-2 with Martinelli. They got a corner at the end of the game. They've got no goalie because he goes up for the corner. We get a counterattack. And, man, we needed that win. We needed it so bad. If we'd lost this game, I would have been a doomer. It would have been over. I guarantee it.
Of course, God smiles upon you again with some dumb shit once again.
Yeah, I finished the game. I'm awake. It's early. I get some coffee. I'm watching the puppies. And I'm like, they're playing Forest. I actually texted my dad after the game. I texted my dad and my brother. I was popping off. I'm really excited. And I was like, we really needed that win. Too bad City play a crap team. Lo and behold, Chris Wood scores I want to say 90-something.
No, 84th
minute equalizer, and City dropped points to Forest, so we're now back in first. So we were thinking, you know, Wednesday it's the title decider game. Actually, what the title decider game could be is the Aston Villa game and the Nottingham Forest game, because City randomly dropped points right after taking the lead. So we're back ahead with the game in hand, which is absolutely huge. And we're coming off a win where we scored 4 goals. So I really think the momentum, I mean, we talked about momentum last week. It's firmly with us again.
Yeah, well, I think what I thought you were going to say just now is that the real title decider is going to be the next game between Arsenal and City, which I don't know when it is, but
it's I want to say it's in March. I'm quickly trying to find
I'm trying to find it too. All I can see is stuff from the April 26th.
Yep.
What the heck? That's one of the last games of the season, I think. What match week 33, yeah. So
there's there's 5 games after.
Yeah, which is plenty of time, but it's midweek again. Why? Why is it midweek again? I guess did that game get rescheduled too, or
was I don't know.
It just seems that game is midweek. Maybe it's because the FA Cup is a weekend. Oh, I don't know. Whatever. Anyway. That actually could end up being something of a title decider. Although, again, there's a lot of time between now and then and between then and the end of the season. So it'll just be interesting to see how things shape up as we continue to kind of watch the season play out. I think, honestly, the biggest winners through this whole scenario, and we talked about them last week, are Man United, because they just continue to chug along and pick up points, like destroying every random bottom half team that they're playing 3-0. As we mentioned last week, and Rashford scores every time.
Yep.
It's the same game over and over and over again. And quietly, they've managed to sneak within 6 points of top. Granted, they're still Arsenal have a game in hand on them as well, but they are just kind of quietly chugging along and making their way towards the top of the table. So I'm going to maintain again that I think the probability of them winning the Premier League is like marginally increasing week by week. Yeah. So like, I don't think we should count them out yet, although it is more unlikely.
My heart already can't handle this close race with City. I don't know how Liverpool did it for so long. I literally, like, we're halfway through the season, and just thinking about what Liverpool fans have had to go through with these years against City just makes me sick. Like, I mean, I'm extremely excited to be in this position, but it's like just so stressful.
The only bad news for United is that they've already played Arsenal and City twice each.
Yeah.
So they don't have that ability to shift the result in their favor. Whereas obviously City and Arsenal still have to play each other. So that is a big, big kind of thing to consider as well. I guess that means that maybe United have easier fixtures for the rest of the season though. So I don't know. All things, what goes around comes around in the Premier League, I guess. So anyway, do you have any final thoughts on Arsenal as a whole? I mean, I know it probably would have been better served to do a reaction after the City game and then fill it in with what happened at Villa, but obviously, you know, just not how the format of the show is, but.
Yeah. One thing I forgot to mention, cause I brought it up for the City game. Jorginho played again in the Villa game. I thought he was fantastic in that game. I did actually notice him in that game, but for good reasons. Also, interestingly, Trossard started the Aston Villa game. I think this was more of a rotational thing, but it is something to note because I was talking about that happening. As a whole, though, you know, like I said, I think the momentum has shifted. I hope so anyway. I think we are now in a position where the mentals are extremely strong. I think we should be able to win our next couple of fixtures and score some goals. Our next game is against Leicester, who in recent memory we've been very good against. And then Everton at home.
Don't say that. They'll beat you 4-1.
That's true. but yeah, and then Everton at home, who I know we drop points to, but our record against them at home is night and day compared to our record against them at Goodison. And I don't know the specifics, but we have Jesus coming back sometime in the future before the season is over. So that will be huge. I'm hoping I think that it's true, but I'm hoping the momentum has actually shifted and our next couple games should be not as nerve biting or nail biting.
All right. We will leave the Arsenal chat there to be continued next week, no doubt. Hopefully whenever Leicester beats them 4-1 as a penance for Reece saying that they're going to beat them on the show, which is what happens to me. We'll now move on and we can gloss over this as quickly as you like, Ethan, but we've got to talk about it. Brentford securing a point with a 96th minute equalizer through Vitaly Yenelt. How do you even analyze this, Ethan?
I mean, it's just easy to say that once again, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but it's the same problems that are costing us these last minute or these games in general, you know, having points taken off the board. And I've going back to what I've said, I don't understand what Vieira is doing with our starting 11. Our top or our starting front three was Ayu, Mateta, or Olise, Mateta, and Schlupp. Schlupp was playing wing this time for some reason. I just don't understand anymore. So the way the game went, you know, we just weren't getting very many chances going forward. And so it's kind of just like, and they weren't doing as well as they have been these past few games. So it was literally just, you know, back and forth, nothing too worried about, you know, worried about the scoring, but not too worried about conceding. We had Anderson back for this game actually. So that was a big plus. And then, you know, he finally does something good. He brings on Eze, which I don't understand why he wasn't starting in the first place. Oh, and Lokonga started. And he looked really good this game. But funnily enough, Eze came on for Lokonga. Schlupp was still out there for some reason. So I was like, okay, weird. Eze made the difference. He needs to start more because he immediately scored a header, which is funny enough that he has scored more headers than Mateta this season because Mateta's bald and 6'5". And so I don't understand how, but yeah, it was a good goal too. Olise has been one of our best assisters this season. So I was really happy with that. I like that
being bald makes you better at winning headers.
It does. And he's got a big cranium.
Got a big target.
Yeah. But it must be something with, you know, the shine of the sun and the ball. Yeah. But you know, we continued to try and see out this game. We brought on Richards at some point for Mitchell because he had to go off. And so it was another strengthen in the back. And then we also brought on Amada for, who was it? I'm trying to remember who he came on for. Let me figure that out real quick. In which I've been impressed with Amada recently because, you know, I didn't really know how to make or what to make of him when he came
it's
in.
For Mateta.
Mateta. So Schlupp was still in the game. At this point in the game.
I'm lying.
Mateta, I think, came off.
Yeah, he and Edouard came on for Mateta and Olise.
Yeah. But doesn't matter. Schlupp is still on the pitch. So I'm trying to understand what his purpose in this team is. But, you know, we're doing good. We're trying to see out this game. And then I'm actually thinking to myself, wow, I haven't felt a win so long. We haven't had a win in 2023 yet. And then as soon as I'm thinking that, the stupidest goal happens. And I'm glad nobody saw it, but I basically had a like 12-round it was a 1-round because I beat the shit out of my pillows. I literally went to
TKO
town.
TKO on the pillow.
Yeah. So I had about had it at that point because it's like, and I was taught, I don't know who I was telling this, but it was like, I feel so close to this club to where I kind of relate my own life to it. And it's almost like, annoying to see that like this be a rough period, but then like, oh, we see a little bit of hope and then it just immediately goes away and you're like, it's all hopeless, we're all gonna die, it's, you know, emergency sirens everywhere. So I was super annoyed, and we still have some hard games coming up. We've got Liverpool next, and it's just hard to be, you know, confident about going into these games with, you know, Vieira not picking the right lineup and, you know, still dealing with the likes of Zaha injured. It's just hard to be happy about stuff like this. So, yeah, super annoying for it to be like that. But hopefully we can find a way to get back to a win in 2023.
That is pretty brutal, dude. I didn't realize that. You probably even said it last week and I forgot again. But yeah.
I had a movie moment because I was checking the scores on the app. And I got something in my throat. I open my phone to check the scores, and I'm like, oh, cool, Pellers are winning 1-0. And, like, immediately as I thought that to myself, I saw the score update.
No.
And I was like, no, no, no.
I was literally like having a baby fit, like a 10-year-old Ethan fit. Like I literally, the first thing I did was I hit my wall. So I like hurt this side of my wrist, but then I was like, oh shit, that hurt. And then it started beating up my You can laugh. It's fine.
No. Yeah. Okay.
But it was just a big mess. And I was so frustrated because it's like, we've had that happen so many times. It literally happened in the last Brentford game we played against them this season at home. They scored a late goal and took a point away, which was so ridiculous. And I actually found this tweet and it absolutely angers me because it might not seem like a lot, but when you think about like how important these games were, it's super annoying. Since Vieira took over, we dropped 18 points from goals conceded past the 85th minute.
Oh my God.
And when you think about it, a win is 3 points. So taking away two, and they just add up to where it's so ridiculous. So it's pretty shambles at the moment.
And that's also just such an emotional sucker punch. Like
I know
18 emotional sucker punches.
Like I cannot be like happy about it. Like even if we go like 3-0 up, I'm not going to be happy about it. I'm going to be like nervous and shitting my pants until the game ends. But yeah, there needs to be a lot of changes. I'm still like on the fence about what I believe in Vieira in or out, but part of me was thinking like this might actually be Vieira out time because, you know, and someone said this too, he's been a really good coach, you know, getting these players to, you know, play or adjust to the prem pretty well. But it's just like, he's a good coach, but he's just not the best manager. Like he has a hard time picking lineups and making subs and, you know, obviously the transfer business is not his like full thing. It's obviously up to the owners too, but like, he just didn't seem to, he's like, I'm fine with what we have. And I'm just like, that's not the mindset when, you know, I mentioned this in the transfer podcast, you know, you to improve with the teams improving around, you have to improve as well, or you're going to be in the same spot or lower. So it's just a big mess at the moment. I don't really see it getting any better, which sounds so depressing, but it's the truth.
Well, it could always be worse. You could be Chelsea. You could have spent the GDP of a small nation on players in January and still lose 1-0 to a team that was 4 points adrift at the bottom of the league and has no manager and no foreseeable outlook to even be in the Premier League this season or next season.
We need to have a jingle for the crap. Now,
listeners, please turn your attention to Stamford Bridge, where we will all point and laugh at Chelsea Football Club. Dude, like seriously, it's a weekly occurrence. It's gonna be over next week because guess who their next fixture is? Yeah. Yes. So Dr. Tottenham is gonna step in and they're gonna be fine after next week. But you heard it here first.
This tweet from Transfer Checker. I sent it in our group chat.
Dude, I love Transfer Checker so much.
Yet another massive result for Chelsea, taking their record to a whopping 1 win in the last 10 games. Arsenal and Man City will be looking over their shoulders. A title push is on the cards for Chelsea's £650 million men. They can't be stopped.
650 pound men. Those are some large men.
No wonder they're dropping points.
They can't win a game. Oh man, that's hilarious. That's actually hilarious. So another, just if I told you before the game that the result was as follows: Southampton score a goal just before halftime and win 1-0, what would you have said the scenario would be? A Ward-Prowse free kick.
Yeah,
these things write themselves. They really do. I wonder, I'm sure someone on Twitter has done this, but I would like to see someone go through and find all the points that Ward-Prowse has won them via free kicks, because it's got to be an astounding number.
They honestly definitely can't score another way. So
yeah.
Probably a good thing he's perfected this.
Another interesting thing that I thought that like to add on to Chelsea's misery is both of Southampton's strikers were making their full Premier League debut in this game. Paul Onuachu and Kamaldeen Sulemana, who I'm going to be honest, I've never heard of before reading them off the team sheet just now. I think maybe I knew they had made some signings, but
you're going to hear about them because Chelsea are going to sign them in a second for $100 million.
did you guys see that thing after Chelsea lost to Dortmund? That's another thing. Chelsea lost to Dortmund midweek in the Champions League. And the Sky coverage had a clip where Jamie Carragher, the camera was panning over the Dortmund squad, like celebrating in front of the yellow wall. And Jamie Carragher's like, "We've just had news come in. Todd Boehly has submitted a bid of £3 billion for the entire Dortmund squad. And they're going to be joining up. They're going to be joining up with Chelsea for training next week." Like, if you can't beat them, buy them. That's the Todd Boehly
methodology. He is me when I was playing career mode in 2016. I'm not kidding. In career mode, if I lost to a team, I'd buy their best player. Not even to use them, just so they couldn't have them. And that's how he is.
Didn't you buy Harry Kane?
Yes, I bought Harry Kane. Put him in the reserves? Yeah, I didn't even sell him. I was like, I don't want you to play. Like, I just don't want you to play.
the true villain. Yeah, that is absolutely hilarious. Just everything about it is hilarious. And the thing is, Southampton could easily not win another game this entire season. That's how awful they are, and they still have managed to put in a performance and get 3 points against this absolute steaming pile of dog shit that just, oh my God. It also makes me laugh that they spent £650 million on players, and they're starting, no disrespect, but David Datro Fofana up front, who is like a young player that they signed to be part of their loan army, and he's ending up starting at striker despite the fact that they spent egregious sums of money. I just don't understand the vision. There is no vision. There is no passion. There is no fucking mindset. That's how I feel about Chelsea right now.
Yeah, I mean, Graham Potter kind of threw some shade, or maybe not, however you want to interpret it, but he said basically something along the lines of like, "I don't want it to sound arrogant, but I don't think I am the problem right now." Kind of indicating either it's the squad or it's still the squad, but not the players themselves, but the fact that Todd Boehly is signing the universe.
Yeah. Well, what is he supposed to do? Like, Todd Boehly spends all this money on all these players, and I think most good managers would say you can't just insert them all into the team in the middle of a season and expect it to go well, but he kind of has to, because the outlay that they've placed on these players means that not playing them would be a huge waste of money, and then immediately Boehly's going to sack him. So it's, yeah, I don't know. It's turning into Todd Boehly FC a little bit, and I think he obviously doesn't understand how the Premier League works in terms of you have to slow build these things. Instant success is not really a viable option. Because even like when Chelsea first got their influx of cash under Abramovich, and when City got it in 2008, like, they didn't win the league for another, each of them didn't win the league for another 4 years. And there were some tough times through there and some bad signings, but they did things slowly and kind of built up. Well, not slowly relative to everyone else, but, you know,
I mean, look at Newcastle.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly a good example. Like, it's very methodical buildup, very structured planning, putting your faith in a manager to get the best out of the players that you already have. And yeah, I mean, it's clearly worked out for them. Yeah. They've dropped points in recent weeks, but like, just where they are right now, they're super ahead of schedule. So yeah, totally agree. I had something else to say, but I can't remember what it was.
Very unfortunate that a lot of these players are potentially, I think it's like on the borderline between potentially and actually, it's like they are ruining their careers themselves by joining Chelsea.
Yeah.
Because
to quote Graham Potter, I don't want to sound arrogant in terms of Arsenal, but I think had we signed Mudryk, he would not be this bad. I don't think he would be.
Yeah, and then it's just like these players are not going to get game time, and it's going to be like every other loan army, except like they're going to actually not get loaned out. They're just going to stay there and not play. Mudryk will probably be playing for Bolton next season or something like that, or a few seasons down the line. No disrespect to Bolton. He might be in the fifth tier, or whatever it's called.
Conference,
yeah.
He'll join Wrexham.
Yeah.
Imagine, dude. Yeah, what a signing.
But it's just, it's definitely feeling like, you know, Manchester United used to be the don't join there or you're going to ruin your career. I feel like it's definitely switched a little bit.
Yeah, and I this is what I was gonna say. I saw someone made like one of these fire Twitter comps for, you know, like how they do for players that they think are dope or whatever. And it was Mudryk from this game, and it was just all of his terrible touches, like failed crosses and stuff, with some like Hypebeast music in the background too. And it was like introducing Chelsea's 100 million pound player, and he domes a cross into the out of the stadium, like.
Those remind me of the like TikTok comments where someone will like post a like their new song, and then everyone's like in all caps, "Turn that down!" And it's just a bunch of fire emojis. Like it sounds like a nice comment, but it's just like, "Turn that shit off." He's not making it out.
What is he cooking, bro?
Yeah,
yeah. All right, I think we've sufficiently beat the dead horse by now.
Until next week.
Yes. Yeah. Well, no, actually, stay tuned for Chelsea's resurrection as they play Spurs, and Spurs magically fix everyone else's issues, but not their own. Moving on. I just had a moment where I could not come up with a segue. I just wanted to touch on this game very briefly because I think it's a kind of signifier of momentum for both of these teams. Liverpool have picked up another win at the expense of Newcastle. Yeah, which they're now kind of on a slide of not picking up points because they drew with Bournemouth last week, which is obviously points that they would be looking to pick up. And then,
did you know Newcastle have 2 defeats this season and both of them are against Liverpool?
Really? Really?
Yep. They've had a million draws and they've only lost 2 games.
And both of them were to Liverpool. That is fascinating. Now, the interesting thing, though, is that the big storyline from this game is that Nick Pope got himself a red card with a ridiculous piece of behavior where Alisson was going for his 4th Premier League assist with the same textbook pass that he plays to Salah every time this happens. And Nick Pope comes rushing out and lays on the ball, collecting it 5 yards outside the area. And earns a red card. It was a very odd piece of behavior by him when you're already 2-0 down. So I don't really understand why he did that, but he did. And now he will miss the League Cup final, which is next weekend. So now it'll be Martin Dubravka playing against his former club, Man United, which is not quite.
Did he have zero appearances for them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he appeared in any competition. I think he was their third goalkeeper, I'm pretty sure. Because I think, am I tripping? Dean Henderson is still there, right?
He's at Forest.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Right. Oh, my God.
Jack Butland is their third choice.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, they got Jack Butland in January on loan.
From Palace?
Yeah. After they returned to Rocco.
Why? What does that move do? What is the difference between Butland and Dubravka?
Well, I guess Newcastle wanted Dubravka back, and Jack Bolton's not going to play either way. So
yeah. I guess he's English too. It's the homegrown third goalkeeper.
Yeah, I don't know. Guaita is made of like metal or something.
He never gets injured. What?
He never gets injured. So Butland never had a chance.
I'd prefer Sam Johnston.
He's
over him
made
anyway.
Of metal. That's crazy. I forgot Sam Johnston was at Palace too, dude. What the heck? All these random goalkeepers are just accumulating in the Premier League.
Yeah.
But I don't remember what we were talking about. That's fine.
Liverpool.
I'm tired of talking about Liverpool. Let's move on. Let's touch on Man United Leicester a little bit. Josh did send some thoughts, which is a crazy thing to send.
You should read them like a caveman, because that's how I read them.
Where are the thoughts?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking too. Leicester thoughts from Mir. We
the disrespect.
He said, "This is Reese's idea." He said, "You should read
this."
That's
how
like
I read it.
That's
how I read it in my head.
1, we were the better team, but lacked overall quality to actually finish our chances. 2, United when counterattacking looked good.
That's the one that was so caveman-y.
3, great game from De Gea.
So you've given Josh the Alabama accent and the caveman accent.
He's
do you have
regressing.
A bone to pick with Josh?
I do, actually. Yeah.
He'll never know unless
he's,
you tell.
Yeah, he's never going to listen to this, so he'll never find out. But he's regressing through time periods.
Yeah.
He went back to the Civil War era, and now he's a Neanderthal. So.
Oh, God. Next, he'll be right. Roaring like a dinosaur.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, Josh, not really. But of course, as we mentioned, Marcus Rashford scoring again twice. Yeah, counterattacking play apparently works well for them. I don't even want to call them a counterattacking team though, because I think like they do counterattack, but it's more of like, I almost want to call them a direct attacking team.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Leicester had a decent amount of possession in this game, but it wasn't enough to warrant, like, man, the possession is 55 to 45 in favor of United. So it feels to me more like United are just a very direct team and they are very good at punishing mistakes. By the way, 26 shots for United in this game, which is a lot. Leicester, I think maybe continuing to have some defensive question marks after their outstanding display against Spurs.
Woot phase for Rashford's second. It was so just, or for Jadon Sancho, I mean, it was like, what are you even doing? It was literally a 1-2, like simplest thing you can do. Bars, I'm spitting bars. 1-2, simplest thing you can do.
Wow, face smells like poo. Yeah, probably.
probably spends more time kung fu than defend. I don't know.
I told Ethan we were watching the like all NBC Sports all goals during dinner, and I was like, that's literally a pro club's goal. Like,
yeah, I haven't watched a huge amount of him this season, but I have to say, every time that he's played, I have not been impressed by what I've seen, except for when he plays against Spurs. So. He was like their emergency center back signing, and I think it shows. Now, is he a better alternative to Daniel Lamardi? Probably. Yes. Yes, but I still think like Sutar and Foss, whatever, does not strike me as a suitable long-term center back pairing. And maybe Josh feels differently about that. I don't know, but that's how I feel. So. I guess it's time to talk about Spurs, although I've of course naturally interjected making fun of them as much as I can throughout the podcast, just as a way of coping, which is interesting because this is a 2-0 victory and we were fine. Like, it's not like we played poorly or anything. The first half was an absolute snooze fest. I feel bad for anyone who wasted 45 minutes of their life watching that, because, this was two teams setting up with the same exact formation, two in midfield, three at the back, which really looked like five in possession, because Spurs' wingbacks on the day, by the way, were Ben Davis and Emerson Royale, which before the game, everyone was thinking, oh my God, this is the most defensive, insane, ridiculous, like, we're going to watch a back five sit back for 1,000 years and never go forward and attack. And then they combined for the first goal, which is hilarious, but
it was a great goal, by the way.
It was an insane goal for no reason. Apparently we should play defensive wingbacks more often if we're going to try to score goals. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What I will say about this game, the entire thing is caveated by the fact that West Ham are fucking awful. They are genuinely, this is probably the worst opposition performance I've seen turned in against Spurs this season. Like, they were absolutely dismal. They had one chance 30 seconds into the game when the ball fell to Jared Bowen and he had a strike from outside the box. Outside of that, I never legitimately was never worried that they were going to score ever. So I like, and that's saying something for the way Spurs' defensive record has been going this season. So I was really, really not impressed with them. And I think they are on track to get relegated, although I feel like they won't, because like these big clubs just never seem to go down.
They're going to escape relegation and then they're going to get fifth place next season.
Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised, because I don't really understand what's gone so horrendously wrong from them since last season. Because obviously they were really good last season, went on that great run in the Europa League. Maybe it's just the fatigue from last season catching up with them. Maybe it's, I don't know, not the right recruitment, but I don't know. They just did not look like a Premier League quality team. So Kind of an interesting one to keep an eye on. I hope they get relegated, even though I kind of doubt they will. Also, I got jump scared by Danny Ings because I forgot that he transferred to West Ham when he came on. And I don't think he touched, he honestly might not have touched the ball. And I'm serious about that. My jump scare was for naught, but
I told Ethan I lost track of time and I was in the Game of Thrones grind. And so by the time the game started, I was in the middle of an episode. So I was like, oh, I'll just finish the episode. I checked the scoreline.
That was a good decision.
Done. Well, I checked the scoreline after the episode's done because the game's still going on. It's 1-0 Spurs. I'm like, all right, West Ham could still bring it back. Let me turn on the game. I'm not kidding. Sun scored 2 minutes after I put the game on. And so I turned it back off and went back to Game of Thrones.
Nice. Yeah, that was actually there were a couple of other selection dilemmas to be had today, aside from the wingbacks, which I think really Davis started at left wingback, which is the first time he started there this season. But I think it's only because Sessegnon is now injured and Perisic is 35 and cannot play every game. So I think, and since we released Matt Doherty for nothing, we no longer have a player who can cover on that side. So Davis is going to have to fill in. Which, again, he was actually great in this game, so fair enough. If that's what it's going to be like in the future, then all right, I have no complaints. But the more interesting thing, of course, was in midfield, which in our 1-0 loss to Milan this week in the Champions League, all three of our what I'll call senior midfielders were unavailable because Bissouma and Bentancur are obviously out long-term with injuries, and then Højbjerg was suspended from yellow card accumulation in the group stage. So Sarr and Skip actually started together in midfield, and they were the best players on the pitch. They were really, really good, held their own really well. I really like the look of Pape Sarr. I think he's someone who every time he has the ball, I only ever see him look to progress. Like a lot of our midfielders do this thing where they recycle the ball, like pass backwards, pass sideways, just to kind of hold possession, which I think is partly an instruction, but also partly just their kind of tendency from their years playing in other systems or whatever. Like Bissouma, for example, was a recycler at Brighton. That was basically what he did a lot of the times is recycle the ball and recycle possession. But Sarr is just not that. As soon as he gets onto the ball, he's looking to play a pass through the lines, to play it out wide to one of the wingbacks. He's looking, you know, anywhere to progress the ball. So I was a little bit disappointed that he didn't start today because I think Højbjerg and Sarr is actually a good, could possibly be a really good tandem. That being said, Skip enjoyed a really good run in the team last season, and I thought he was back to his best today. He got an early yellow card, which is never easy to manage in midfield, especially when there's only two, but he was pretty much faultless for the rest of the game. I really, really enjoyed his performance. I think he did not let West Ham control the midfield at all. I think Declan Rice is going to be turn up in the wash after Skip washes his pants because he was in Skip's pocket the entire game. Every time Declan Rice got possession, Skip was there. So
I don't care about what happens in the internally with Tottenham Hotspur Football Club, but I want nothing more than for Skip to become y'all's captain because for Skip to be the skipper would just be so great.
Yeah. And the thing is, he totally is like captain material too, just like the way he carries himself and the way he talks. And he's very like, even whenever he was first starting games, like there was a spell under Pochettino when he started a few games randomly. I don't actually understand why he did that, but it worked. He was, I think, 18 at the time, and he speaks like a 35-year-old. So he's just a perfect captain material. The other thing, of course, is that Sun has finally is no longer immune to being dropped, and Richarlison starts over him. Richarlison wasn't great. I think I don't know what to think about Richarlison, to be honest, because it's almost too small of a sample size to make a decision. But anyway, what is important is that this is the second time Son has started the game on the bench. The first time he came on and scored a hat trick against Leicester. And this time he comes on and scores a goal against West Ham. So I think the moral of the story is we should use Son as a substitute more often. And I'm serious about that because him starting every game while he's garbage is not good for his confidence either. So what's the point in doing that if you can just, you know, rotate, give some other players some time and then have him as a weapon to come off the bench. So yeah, I don't understand the decision making. Hopefully he will, you know, Conte slash Stellini, which we need to get onto that also, will continue to utilize the rotation method. Let's talk about that now. So midweek, the big news that broke, of course, was that after our game in Milan, Conte decided to stay in Italy because we obviously broke the news a couple weeks ago that he had his gallbladder removed in an emergency situation. So he pushed himself and he was back on the bench for the Leicester game and for the Milan game, but decided that ultimately he wasn't really recovered. And he didn't really look right either. Like, usually he gets up and paces around the touchline and stuff, but he really didn't leave his seat. He looked exhausted, understandably. So he's decided to stay in Italy for a few more weeks. Christian Stellini is taking charge while he's gone. And the funny thing is, across Inter and Spurs, every game that Stellini has managed in Conte's stead, whether it be through suspension or through something like this, he's won. He has a perfect record. So I don't know, just kind of an interesting thing. But I kind of think that what's going to happen is that Conte is going to spend the next couple weeks in Italy, maybe another month or so in Italy. Stellini's going to manage the team. It'll be fine. And then like a month later, we're going to get a statement from Spurs saying, in light of recent events, we've determined to mutually terminate Antonio Conte's contract 3 months early or whatever it would be. Right. And then I think what they would do is either just let Stellini and Mason take the rest of the season, or they would hire Pochettino, who I was telling Reese this also, that I actually think I would be genuinely surprised if Pochettino is not the Spurs manager at the start of next season, because he's been posting stuff on his Instagram account.
He's like,
nice sunny day here at this restaurant in North London. And we're like, okay, guy, like we know you're here. We see you, we know. So, which the thing is, like, his house is actually in North London. Like, he still lives there. So it makes sense that he's there, but it's still just funny that he's posting that on his Instagram. But I also kind of don't think it's a coincidence that our best performances this season have all come while Conte's away. I think the other time that he was away was in the Champions League in the group stage, when he had received a red card in the previous match and was suspended. Stellini managed, and that was the game against Marseille, the last game of the group stage, where we won 2-1 and Højbjerg scored in the last minute. And then, of course, Stellini was managing for the City game, and again here for this win against West Ham. So I just don't think it's a coincidence. Something isn't right with Conte and the squad, which I think I have not done a good job of contextualizing this. I've kind of been a little bit, I would say I'm pretty much Conte out at this point, because I don't see the point in pursuing the marriage if it's obviously not going to continue after this season, right? So like, if he's obviously not going to sign a contract, then what's the point? Like, there's no reason to keep him around for the rest of the season. At least let Mason get some games under his belt, or bring someone else in who can then start fresh next season. So, but the one important thing to say about Conte, and why I think this season has been so difficult in that regard, is because, like, he's had a shit year, because he, at the very start of the season, and we forgot, or we did talk about this when it happened, of course, Spurs fitness coach passed away, Gianpiero Ventrone, who was a close friend of Conte's, and they've coached together for almost 20 years. And so he lost Gianpiero Ventrone. And then 2 weeks later, I can't remember who the second one was. Old Italian striker who passed away, but I cannot remember his name. I'm sorry about that. But he was one of Conte's dearest friends as well. And then a few months later after that, Sinisa Mihajlovic, old Juve teammate of Conte's as well, and a dear friend of his, passed away. So he's lost three close personal friends in the last year, and had to have an emergency gallbladder removal surgery, which is just a shitty year, right? I mean, so I think a lot of his sort of mentality and maybe blasé-ness a little bit can be attributed to that, I think. So I think what we can do is, just if that does happen and Spurs and Conte decide to part ways I think it's just a kind of, you know, we appreciate what you did for us. And I think it's just best for everyone if we move on. You know, I don't think there's no animosity or anything like that. I think it's just time, you know. So that's kind of the important thing to contextualize Conte's tenure with, is the fact that he's suffered all these great, you know, personal difficulties, right? So anyway, I think that's enough for my Spurs spiel. I think we'll kind of leave it there unless anyone else has any final thoughts to discuss.
I did want to ask about Dan Juma. Like, what do you think about
him? I'm glad you asked, because I wanted to point this out. I think that he is a useless signing, to be honest. not because he's a bad player, but just because he's not going to play. Like, he's our sixth forward option at this point. Like, actually, maybe even less, because Lucas Moura, who's been in the void for the last 1,000 years, came on ahead of him today, which is bizarre to me. Like, Lucas Moura hasn't been on the bench for almost 6 months, and he was on the bench today and came on ahead of new signing Dan Juma. So someone explain that to me. I don't know. But I mean, I'm always happy to have players there that can make a difference. And obviously he looked good in the 20 minutes that I saw him play against Preston, but he's gonna rack up a cool 6 appearances, no goals, no, or 1 goal at Preston, no assists probably in his time. Odd signing, especially when Brian Hill was there and has been loaned back to the team that he was bought from. Just doesn't make a lot of sense. It really does not make much sense to me. So I'll say this. I would be shocked if he actually starts a football match for Spurs ever. Cause I don't see a world where he does. Cause he's literally 6th in the pecking order right now. So
I did want to ask, because it seems like a lot of players these days are, you know, picking the ideal of, you know, joining a bigger club and hoping to break through when there's literally no opportunity for them to get ahead in front of everybody. And this goes for a bunch of players.
So. I bet he wishes he joined Everton now. Like, seriously, because he would be playing, and he's not going to be playing at Spurs. I mean, we signed Richarlison for £60 million and he can't even get a game hardly. So, you know, yeah, I think he probably wishes he signed for Everton, but all right, gentlemen, I think we will conclude proceedings at this juncture. I think, first of all, we must, what?
We have no jersey of the week, I just realized.
Yeah, it's a sad story. It is a tragic story. We'll have Josh do two next week or something. But yeah, we do. I'm sure we do have album of the week, though. I'm absolutely certain that Ethan has prepared something for us.
We do. I picked this, and it's actually a cool thing to talk about, but I have this box set. It is George Harrison's, one of his most popular albums since he left the Beatles. It's got 3 LPs and a bunch of cool stuff in it. It's funny because there's a song on here that I was just listening to constantly after that Palace game, because it was like, it epitomized my feelings, and it's called Beware of Darkness. And it's just super sad and super mopey, and it's like, this is literally how I feel right now. And it's a great album. There's like also happy songs and whatnot, but I listened to that song maybe like 15 times at the day or right after the game. So give it a listen.
Excellent stuff. Thank you for joining me on this evening, gentlemen. Reese, of course, thanks for coming along.
Glad to be here. Thanks for hosting, Gage.
You're welcome. And Ethan, of course, as well. Thanks for coming on, even though in spite of a depressing week as a Palace fan, or a depressing time, you've continued to come on and shed some light on the situation. So yeah, thanks.
It's nothing new, but I wouldn't live without it. And thank you for hosting, obviously.
Yeah. All right. And of course, the biggest thank you of the night goes to you, the listener, for sticking out and making it all this way with us. We appreciate you. We hope you're having a great week, and we hope you enjoy the Premier League coming up. Please stay safe, stay healthy. We love you all, and it's a goodbye from us.